Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, it's time for that dynamic duo.
To the Batmobile.
Not them.
You mean?
It's Hancock and Kelly.
Well, that's right, ladies. We are a duo.
On News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Hey, good Monday afternoon. It's Hancock and Kelly in for Mark Reardon. We'll be with you today and tomorrow. Mark getting some much-needed time off. And John, just some absolutely horrific photos coming out of Paris.
Yeah, the great cathedral Notre Dame, finished in the 14th century, full of architects, artifacts, I mean, from the Christian faith. A tragic, tragic day, and this thing has, this fire just exploded, and rapidly the spire has come down. Firefighters still fighting the fire, and when we got here to prepare for the show today, we weren't planning on talking about this, Michael, but this is a human calamity.
Well, it's one of the major, major structures on the planet. Joining us on the KMOX guest line is the fire chief for the city of St. Louis. He's Dennis Jenkerson. He's traveling today, but he was kind enough to take a couple of minutes to visit with us. Chief Jenkerson, good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, guys. How you doing?
Fine. We're all watching these horrible photos coming out of Paris. I assume as a firefighter, you are watching them as well with great interest. One of the things that we noticed, Chief, is that it seemed a long time between the spotting of the fire and actually pouring water onto the flames, and that may actually be a strategy.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is one of those fires that you've got to have experience on the scene. You've got to have firefighters who have been through fires in very, very large structures and high-placed areas, difficult to reach. Any type of obstacle you can imagine is at this fire. I mean, like you said, it's an old structure, 800 plus years old. I mean, there's all types of things you got to think about before you start criticizing the firefighters as why it took so long to get the water in place. It's, you know, you're not going to pull up with a truck and pull out the small hand line. This is something where you got to look at. It's got to be analyzed. There should be a pre-plan in place. If this comes in, what are we going to do? And here's what we're going to do. And you got to stick to it. Besides some of the criticism from the people who don't understand the positioning, the strategy that all goes into place of fighting a fire of this just tremendous magnitude.
Yeah, you know, you look at this thing and as it burns, and of course it's a historically significant piece of architecture, and I would think that, is there any hope that some of this building can be salvaged at this point, or do we not have that information yet?
Well, I don't have that information yet. You know, I've been watching some of the videos coming out of that area, out of Paris, just like you guys have, and you see the spire going down, which in most large church fires, yeah, that's the spires, the cathedrals, the highest points go quick because all it is a wood structure with open areas and voids that it's a steeple. It's when you build a fire in your home, how do you position the wood upright so that it travels quickly? And that's what you have here. So, yes, they have lost the steeple. Now, what they have, protect what you can, save what you can. But even then, you've got to look at the size of these timbers, the size of these roof structures. You know, we're 200-300 foot up in the air. The average fire equipment goes 100 foot in the air. You know, they're in an old part of town. And what's the infrastructure? How much water do they have? What type of ability do they have as far as access to get into this place? You know, and then you look, what's above them? You know, there's two big bell towers, if you will, with tons and tons of iron in them. So you've got to be mindful of what's over your head. So I'm sure it's been pre-planned. You know, we look at the places in the city of St. Louis that we know they're going to cause us issues if we have a fire, and we pre-plan those. We look at our water supply, where are we going to set up, where are we going to position aerial ladders. In other words, what are we going to try and save? And that's what you have to do. And, you know, people start worrying about, well, there's no water being thrown. Well, we're getting ready to fight. We're getting into a spot where we can save this much. We're going to have to write off this amount of product or this amount of property, and you know, that's probably what they're doing. And then just getting the amount of water, and they that they need to fight this fire. You know, these are huge timbers that are all dried out. It's kiln drying wood inside this church, so it's going to produce heat and burn with a veracity that just the average firefighter does not see. And you know, just throwing water on it is not going to put it out. There's a lot of strategy going here with where they're going to make cuts, where they're going to try and hold, what they're going to save, and what they're not going to save, what they're going to forfeit to save as much as they can.
So Chief, it's nearly 9 p.m. now in Paris, so the sun is going down. Probably fortunate that these firefighters got a chance to get a start on this fire with daylight, because I would assume there's some problems and issues you might be able to see in daylight you wouldn't see if you're fighting a fire completely at night.
Well, like I said, you've got an all-wooden roof, you've got stone walls. It's the strategy, the positioning. Hopefully they got a good look at it, and they got a good look at where they think this was going. Is the wind going to change? You know, do they have enough water? You know, you have to make sure that the equipment is in the right place and they don't have to reposition. You know, then you start looking at how much manpower do you have for this thing? These guys, you start fighting the fire for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, and you're moving equipment the whole time and moving your lines. These guys are tired. They're going to be feeling it. So being able to have enough manpower, and it has to be done quickly. I mean, this is, you've got to pick a strategy. You have to have the guys with the experience on the scene who have a pretty good eye, if you will, for where this fire is moving and what it's going to affect, and get the equipment, manpower, and water in position and hold it. Just hold. Just get in position and fight it. And that's hopefully that they're there and they've made the right decisions to save as much of this historic world landmark that they know that can possibly be saved.
Obviously, it's not exactly analogous, but it was just a year or maybe two ago where we had this massive warehouse fire off of Grand in South St. Louis. And that was over a city block wide. You had both residential areas and hospitals close by. What was that fire like, and how much of the calculation was making sure that thing didn't spread?
Well, that fire was a little bit different, only because of the different type of materials that we had inside that warehouse. And that warehouse had different companies storing different type of products. We had flammables. We had, you know, magazines. We had hair. Anything you could think of was, we had wine, liquor, and it was all stored very tightly. With, you know, our biggest concern there was what type of smoke is this fire producing? So we started off with trying to protect exposures. You know, it's where's the smoke going to go? Where's the embers going to go? And the problem we had there is a lot of the smoke was going right at the hospitals. So we set up air monitors and we told the people to stay inside, you know, until we got a good handle on exactly what was in this building. You know, and that's not to say that we didn't send companies into the building. They spent a good 20 minutes in the basement of that building trying to find this fire, but it was so cut up and so compacted and so compartmentalized, they had a difficult time even finding it. The other problem with that fire is that we're pretty sure that fire had burned for a long time and got a pretty good start on it. So, and like you said, another old building, so yes.
He is the fire chief for the city of St. Louis. He's Dennis Jenkerson. He's been kind enough to join us. Chief, thanks for joining us. Sorry it's under these tragic circumstances.
Okay, you guys have a good day. We'll keep watching. Thanks for the information.
Absolutely. Well, what a nice man to take some time to visit with us, John. I would assume being a firefighter, you watch this on TV. Now, this is halfway around the world, that you probably want to jump in and get involved.
Yeah, you would think. And, you know, really interesting insights from Dennis Jenkerson as it relates to, you know, we're watching this thing, and he's right. I mean, I was thinking, where's the water, you know? When you step back and really look at it from a professional viewpoint of a firefighter, you know, there's so many things you've got to determine, and you got to set a game plan and a thing of a tech. It was very interesting to me. And I guess it makes sense. You just never think about it. But these firefighters here, and I'm assuming around the world, they think about what could happen. What's the worst case scenario? What building could catch on fire? And if this building catches on fire, how are we going to fight it? A lot of those decisions are made ahead of time.
About a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, there was a fire on Washington Avenue. I watched it out my window. It was on one of those brutal cold days below zero here in the city. And the fire was raging. And the firemen had been there for about 15 minutes. And you were like, why aren't they throwing water on it? Well, I mean, they've got safety concerns. They've got to make sure they're attacking from the right angle. there was so much. But once they actually got to the throwing the water part on it, it really went away quickly. But that's all about that planning that we talked about. You know, these folks put their lives on the line for us on a daily basis. St. Louis, not unlike Paris. Lots of old buildings here. Now, we don't have thousand-year-old buildings like they have there in Paris. But this is just a tragic story. We'll continue to monitor that and over in Paris. But, John, there was somebody else who was on fire yesterday, and that was Tiger Woods in Augusta National.
Was that not one of the more incredible stories, not just sports stories, human stories that you've ever seen? I mean, here's a guy that was at the very apex of his profession. He was the best, perhaps the best there ever was at his profession. Ran into some personal issues, some health issues, physical issues that made it likely that he was never going to reach anything near that level again. And then he slowly comes back and he fails and he comes back and then he goes away again and he gets more treatment and more practice. And he comes back and he starts to meet with some success. And then here in St. Louis at the PGA, he got close, but not quite. And, you know, all of the people, everybody speculating, can Tiger ever do it again? Can Tiger ever win a major? And then this weekend in Augusta,
it did happen. We're going to visit with our golf correspondent, the expert. You know him, Dan Reardon. He'll be up next after this on KMOX.
He's Hancock. He's Kelly. Together, they're Hancock and Kelly on News Radio 1120 KMOX.
I knew it was in me. No. Did I know it was going to be this week? No. But I had a good feeling that the way I was shaping the golf ball that I was going to be in the mix.
Wow, and what a week it was in Augusta, Georgia. Boy, don't you wish you could have been there. We have somebody who was there. He was our own KMOX golf correspondent. He's Dan Reardon. Dan, welcome back.
Well, it's glad to be back with you, gentlemen. I think I'm reporting for the most unusual location ever. I'm watching four manatees play in the water at the Georgia Aquarium as we get ready to talk about Tiger Woods.
Well, that aquarium is incredible how big it is, so enjoy that. We appreciate you taking a couple of minutes. What is there to say but wow? Maybe one of the most spectacular golf events in the history of golf. Maybe one of the greatest sporting events ever happened yesterday.
Well, certainly a magical moment. I said to Tom Ackerman this morning that when the PGA was in St. Louis last August, everybody was hoping that Tiger was going to get that major win that he's been looking for 11 years in St. Louis. And so when you shift the location, and this is no reflection on Belle Reve, but when you switch the location to Augusta National and you have all the majesty that goes with that venue, and then to have him finish it off, it's sort of routine for him, but nonetheless, it was something. You know, I was there in 97 when he got the first one. And to be there for the 15th one was quite a treat.
And Tiger played good, solid golf yesterday. Nothing too flashy. Didn't really go for it on certain holes. Played fairways and greens, and it paid off. Do you think he knew at the start of the day he could win this tournament?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, he talked about it afterwards. This is something I've tried to stress when I was coaching high school golf, the kids. Tiger said the reason he was able to get this job done this week is he knew where not to miss shots. He knew he was going to miss shots, but he knew, you know, where the places would punish him the most severely. And, of course, we saw the classic example of that came, you know, on the back nine when we saw the last two groups play that par 3 12th hole, and four of the six players put it in the water. And Tiger was asked, did C and Molinari go in the water? And knowing that Koepka and Coulter had gone in the water in the group before, changed his thinking. He said, no. He said, I knew exactly what I was going to do well before I got to that hole. I was going to play a 9-iron. I wasn't going to miss anything. I was going to put it in the middle of the green or just over the bunker. And if anything, you know, I mentioned the 97 win where he won by 12 shots. That was a win based on physical skills. The win on Sunday was one based on knowledge as much as physical skills. I was, again, fortunate enough in 86, my first ever Masters, to see Nicklaus win and listen to Jack talk after that win in 86. And he recounted hole by hole a memory of how he had played that hole at some prior time. And Tiger sort of was in that same mode. He knew exactly what he needed to do, but he also knew what he shouldn't do. And it's the shouldn't that paid off for him more than the should.
Yeah, we're visiting with our golf correspondent, Dan Reardon, who was at the Masters in Augusta, Georgia. And I was going to ask you, and I think you're kind of getting to that point here. Tiger, in this comeback, his game has changed. You know, he and some of it's physical, I suppose. What have you noticed throughout the course of this comeback now that's, I guess, over a year old, that's different fundamentally about the game that Tiger Woods was playing in his heyday?
In getting back a little bit to his heyday, and it's in the clip you played, Tiger was very demonstrative in saying that this week he was able to shape the ball both directions. So he could make it move from right to left, and he could make it move from left to right. And you have to do that at a place like Augusta. He's not as long as he was when he was much younger. Not as magical in terms of shots around the greens as he once was. But tactically, he's never lost his ability to outthink most of the people he's playing with. If you look at the outcome, when they got to the close of this championship or the tournament, Tiger made the great birdie at 16 when he hit it within 3 feet. And at that point in time, it was like somebody had put cellophane over the cups for the rest of the players, because no other player, the only player to pick up a birdie after Tiger made that birdie at 16 was Dustin Johnson, who birdied 17. But, as I said, this was a mental win for him as much as a physical win. He's challenged a little bit going forward because the schedule changes. So in exactly 30 days, he's going to be playing in the PGA Championship at Bethpage, and he has won there. And then 30 days after that, he's going to be playing in the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, and he's won there. But the turnaround physically is a big challenge to him because he needs time for his body to recover.
Well, before we hop into what's ahead for Tiger, and there's two huge prizes looming in the distance, whether or not he can accomplish them, we want to get your opinion. But yesterday you were at Augusta National. You've been going there most of your adult life. It's a special place. The patrons act a little bit different than they do everywhere else. Was the scene different yesterday? Did it take on a different atmosphere than even the hallowed grounds of Augusta are typically used to?
You know, Mike, I just exactly that. When he made the birdie at 16, you know, you can't really walk around this golf course and see much. You can stake out an area, but you can't see much. So quite honestly, I see much of the championship being played out over television. But when he made the birdie at 16, I knew that pretty much the deal had been sealed. And so I went out to 18 green, or as close as I get to 18 green, because I wanted to soak up whatever that atmosphere might have been. And then I wanted to draw a contrast. I mentioned the Nicklaus win in 86, and I wanted to draw a contrast between the two. And I would say a little bit, because Tiger bogeyed the hole. He didn't have, you know, that birdie putt that won the championship. It was a little more muted in that regard, but not in terms of the size of the galleries that showed up. The people, you know, everybody that was at the golf course went over 18, and you can't imagine how many deep. They were routing people down the first fairway. They were routing people everywhere. And so I just backed up and went toward the clubhouse and just sort of watched it play out. And then when he finished the round and he had the championship, what was really special, and I worked my way down to that, and they showed it on the television, they formed a corridor of spectators basically all the way to where he turned in the scorecard. And I think anybody watching knows that there were a dozen or so PGA Tour players waiting for Tiger right there to greet him and congratulate him. And that's when the really spectacular noise took place, is when he walked down that corridor of fans. And Nicklaus didn't have that same opportunity. Nicklaus probably had more emotion when he walked up 18 fairway, even though in his situation, he wasn't the final group. But Tiger's that marched the corridor of fans was really special.
Well, let's look into our crystal ball, Dan Reardon. Two things that we never thought would potentially happen again with Tiger Woods was, one, catching the 81 wins that Sam Snead has. That's a real possibility now, isn't it?
I think that's almost a done deal, given the fact that he's 43 years old now and healthy and knows that he can win. He's going to play a limited schedule going forward, as I said, because he's a little concerned about not stressing his body out too much. But I think the Snead record will certainly be equal and probably surpassed. There's just too much time left on his calendar. And those are events that he still can find the right week where he's good and beat everybody else.
And as we look back at the previous two majors, he was in the Open. He was in the PGA Championship here. He wins the Masters. He is now 3 wins away from tying Jack Nicklaus for the most ever majors. Nobody thought we would ever get there, especially after the last 8 or 9 years we've lived through. Is it really an opportunity that he can get his hands around here?
I think it's realistic to say that, you know, we now know that that's within his range of talent. Keep in mind, the number of players that win majors in their 40s is a small number. Nicklaus won at Augusta at age 46. To come up with 3 or 4 to set the record, that would be the most extraordinary accomplishment for Woods or anybody to do, because majors are different in that regard. You have to have not only the right circumstances that week, but you have to have everybody else cooperate. And they did cooperate yesterday. As I said, nobody really chased him to the finish line yesterday. But it's something that everybody now can put back on their calendar and say, yeah, this is a possibility. And as I said, the next two venues that he's going to play are sites of his major wins. He won at Bethpage in, I think, 2003. He won at Pebble Beach in 2001 when he just toyed with it. I mean, you know, the closest player, he was something like 12 or 13 under, and Ernie Els was 3 over. It was just a blowout kind of thing. So he's very comfortable in both those locations. And then as you go forward, I mean, you just see what happens. But, no, I think it's back in everybody's possibility, and certainly Tiger believes it. He said, I'm not going to talk about it yet, but he says, yeah, that's something that's back in his preparation.
He is KMOX's golf correspondent. He was there yesterday at Augusta to see Tiger win that Masters. Dan Reardon, thanks so much for joining us.
Enjoyed it, gentlemen.
We'll be right back after this.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Get ready for the Cards and Brewers tonight. Ameren Total Access 545. First pitch 640. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. KMOX.
Hey, good Monday afternoon. It's Hancock and Kelly in for Mark Reardon. We'll be with you through tomorrow, and then Mark's back with you on Wednesday. No worries. Charlie Brennan going to be here Monday through Friday this week, right?
He is. He's putting in overtime, Charlie Brennan. It'll be good to hear him on a Friday morning.
I'm going to join Charlie tomorrow at 8:30 for overtime, so you can listen at 8:30 tomorrow morning. I'll be on with Charlie Brennan. You know, John, so much to get into today. Today's tax day. We got to talk about that.
Next hour.
Our own Amy Marks course is up running the Boston Marathon.
Next hour.
We talked about Tiger Woods.
This hour.
Yeah, and yesterday it was kind of strange, right? Because of the weather, they wound up playing the Masters in the middle of the first thing in the morning. Yeah. Usually it's an evening thing. And set to make his announcement for president yesterday was a guy who, I have to confess, 2 months ago I didn't even know who he was. He's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. Yeah. His name is Pete Buttigieg, an interesting up-and-coming spark plug is the way I would describe him, John. Made a really big announcement yesterday that's really caught the left side of the aisle on fire. And yeah, based on watching my Twitter and watching my Facebook over the last 24 hours, Pete Buttigieg is really connecting with people who are left of center.
Yeah, he is. You know, the great thing about this guy, and if you look at the most recent polls out of Iowa and New Hampshire, it's Joe Biden in first place, Bernie Sanders in second place, and Pete Buttigieg in third place in Iowa and New Hampshire. It's so bad for Elizabeth Warren. She's running fourth in New Hampshire, and she's, you know, right
next
door
to Massachusetts.
She's the neighbor,
yeah.
So this guy, now he's, what, 37 years old. He's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, one of the most major metropolitan areas in this country. And
you're not going to insult somebody's credentials to run for president, are you?
Well, just give me a second here.
Okay.
So this tells you a couple of things. It tells you, number one, that the Democrats are a mess right now if they think this is the answer. And number two, it tells you how pitiful, I mean Here you've got this, I don't know, 20 people running for president. What a pitiful field of candidates that the 37-year-old mayor of South Bend, Indiana, is catching fire.
Let me take a little pause here to point out that you are questioning someone's credentials to be president of the United States.
Yes.
You literally nominated a bankrupt reality TV show host to be the president, and
you're
going to sit here.
Hold
on a second, John. And you're sitting here discounting this man's actually run a government. I agree with you. Oh, it's interesting that we have a situation now where mayors of I don't mean this the way that it comes out, but third-rate population-wide cities. I mean, this isn't one of the mega cities. It's not even one of the middle-sized cities. This is one of the smaller cities in our country. Guy's got a compelling story, though. He's a gay man.
Yeah,
he's married. He is a staunch religious man. He has brought with him a real sense of happiness and hope, which I think a lot of people, even a lot of the Never Trumpers, may be looking for. You know, we talked on Friday when I was out of town that usually it's the Republican Party that falls in line and it's the Democrats who fall in love.
Yes.
In the last election in 2016, Democrats fell in line behind Hillary Clinton. It appears as though they're open to falling in love again. I don't know that there is that establishment candidate on the left. I guess it could be a Joe Biden, potentially, but I don't know that you're going to see the falling in line behind Joe Biden that we saw around Hillary Clinton. This guy's kind of a unicorn. He's got some really unique things about himself. He's an excellent speaker. He's coming out of nowhere. Boy, does this sound like somebody? Sounds a lot like the senator from Illinois who got elected to president. And Pete Buttigieg may wind up surprising some people.
Well, he made his announcement yesterday. I think we got a little audio of that, Klein. Let's hear a little of Pete Buttigieg and his announcement.
Pete Buttigieg. They call me Mayor Pete. I am a proud son of South Bend, Indiana, and I am running for president of the United States. And that's why I'm here today, to tell a different story than Make America Great Again. Because there's a myth being sold to industrial and rural communities, the myth that we can stop the clock and turn it back. It is time to walk away from the politics of the past and towards something totally different.
Well, he is going for what could be Donald Trump's Achilles heel here, right? And that was that Donald Trump had a really soft coalition that helped elect him president of the United States. You had the far right, and I guess we can throw the evangelicals in with them, but I don't know that they really believe the religious stuff they talk about being with Donald Trump. So you have the far right, correct? Then you had what's called the Never Trumpers, who just couldn't deal with Hillary Clinton. Some Republicans who kind of held their nose and looked the other way while they voted for a Donald Trump. And then the working middle class Midwesterner that comes from a legacy city, maybe a lot like the one we're in, where industry has left. They're trying to find other ways to be able to make a living. And then rural parts of those industrial states that have been hit so hard by these tariff consequences that Donald Trump's put into place, I think Pete Buttigieg is really going right at the heart of that integral piece that helped elect Donald Trump.
Well, I think you could make that case for Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden potentially would have an appeal to that voter, that kind of Midwestern industrialist city eroding economy voter, perhaps. But this guy, here's my thinking on this, Michael. He's 37 years old.
Yeah,
it's very possible that he will catch to the whim of the Democratic voter out there. I mean, there's no arguing the fact that this guy shot up the polls in Iowa and New Hampshire.
If you watched his speech yesterday, even if you didn't like his politics, it was an impressive speech.
My thinking, however, is that I just have a very hard time thinking that somebody like this, with the scant resume that this guy has.
I can appreciate that, but do you understand how ridiculous that sounds coming from a Republican questioning another person's credentials to be president.
Donald Trump,
the rules are out the window. Like, you're going to make my case. The rules are out the window. Donald Trump changed them. We no
such
longer
a hostile
are looking
media.
For.
It's
hey,
so sad.
Go ahead. I guess it's going to be two against one.
No. I mean, Donald Trump at least said run a substantial business. And Donald Trump, whatever you may think of him, he was universally known. I mean, everybody knew who Donald Trump was, and everybody had formed an opinion of him going into that race. So he wasn't coming out of the blue in the sense that nobody knew anything about the guy. Everybody knew a lot about the guy. I think it's one of the reasons he was able to withstand a lot of the negative information.
Well, and maybe a lot of people are going to know a lot about Pete Buttigieg. I have to tell you, John, confession, I never even heard of the guy 2 months ago. Never even heard of him. And I watched a little bit of his speech yesterday. I was obsessed with the golf. But every other 20th tweet in my timeline was about this Pete Buttigieg from people that I normally kind of align with their politics. Not the far, far left of the Democratic Party, not the far right, not the middle. Progressive, Democratic progressives like myself. I was shocked to see the momentum and the energy that this young man's getting. I bet he's going to have an incredible fundraising report. I think he's an important voice for us to have in this Democratic primary. I don't think we're going to see the only anti-Trump anger and hate in these upcoming primaries. I think we're going to see actual conversation about issues, and I think Pete Buttigieg is going to be one of those people who drags us that way.
Does he take votes away from Bernie or Biden?
Who knows? I mean, I don't know. I would think it was probably more of a threat to Joe Biden than Bernie Sanders.
Well, I think if this guy does, in fact, catch fire, which is probably a bad analogy today, but if he does indeed catch fire with the Democratic voter, the electorate out there, and somehow manages to carve a niche for himself through this very crowded primary field and emerge as the Democratic Party's nominee for president, I think at the end of that process, it makes it more likely than not that Donald Trump will be reelected in November of 2020.
I am not going to allow you to handicap these races at all. You were one of the people, even in the Republican primaries, who said Donald Trump will never be president
often
of the United
wrong,
States.
Often wrong, but never in doubt.
Yeah, well, you're in doubt. You should be in doubt this time because you're going to be wrong.
Well, we'll see what happens. 436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. We've got this thing going on. We're also tracking this fire in Paris, the Notre Dame Cathedral, a uniquely tragic event. We're going to keep our eye on that and talk to you when we come back on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Happy Monday. It's Hancock and Kelly on tax day of all days. Boy, oh, if you haven't done your taxes yet, make sure you get that extension filed and thrown into the mail with today's
However, the extension is no excuse. If you owe money, the extension doesn't...
They want their cash up front.
You got to get the money.
I've had my taxes done for a couple weeks. You?
Yeah. Mine are...
But I refuse to drop that sucker in the mail until the very last minute
If you owe money, I mean, why, you would be foolhardy to send it in before April the 15th and let the government collect interest off of your hard-earned money. It is my contention, Michael, that if people in this country had to write their check to the government the way people that are in business for themselves, you and I, for example, we have to write a check to the government, you know, in some cases every month if you're carrying payroll, or at least every quarter if you're self-employed, as opposed to just having the money deducted from a paycheck that's just a piece of paper. I think if people had to write a check to the government for their taxes, I think there would be a whole lot more tax cut desire in this country than perhaps what you see in a lot of opinion polls.
We're going to get into taxes later in the second hour. We're going to give you everything you need to know. What if you need haven't filled out your taxes
yet? How did the old taxes under Trump come out for you?
Not so good.
Oh, come on, buddy.
I pay my fair share every year.
Of
I gladly
do
it. And, you know, I'm going to leave it at that. Today, if I had to vote, I'm not a happy guy.
My taxes were a lot better this year. They still stink, but they were a lot better this year than they were before Donald J. Trump came into office.
And think of all that experience he had. I can't believe that you're going to sit there and make an argument on experience when you have this man in the White House. And speaking of priceless things we were just talking about, we're continuing to monitor this fire over at Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. And, John, As the sun sets, the fire still continues to rage. I guess they're getting it under control, but boy, we may be looking at decades of damage being done.
Well, they literally had an entire forest holding that thing together. You know, when it was constructed in the 13th and 14th centuries, wood was everywhere. And someone said they had cut down an entire forest to build that cathedral originally. And that's, I would say, well-cured wood, 800-year-old wood. It probably goes up pretty quickly. And just a tragic, to see something that iconic just burning. I don't know. There's something deeply unsettling about that. And it, in the religious significance that it holds for so many people, it's a very, very sad deal.
You had asked me during the break, what is the oldest structure in the United States?
I did ask you that.
I can find here is in Taos, New Mexico.
What?
Is an ancient pueblo belonging to a tribe of pueblo Native Americans. It's 1,000 years old.
How do they know?
Well, I don't know. And then there's a house in Plymouth, Massachusetts that was constructed around 1640.
Right.
So we were saying that Notre Dame was built
twice as old in the 1300s. Wow. It's over twice as old as that place.
You think about that. That it survived two world wars. Even Hitler was bombing Paris. He never bombed Notre Dame.
Yeah.
When I went to Paris, I took a tour of Notre Dame, and there was one place where there had been some shrapnel.
So you've been there.
That had gone through Notre Dame, and that was apparently the only damage that had been done during World War II.
Now, is it Notre Dame over there, or is it Notre Dame?
Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
French pronunciation.
I was looking for the Hunchback, dude. Never found him.
He didn't
and then
him.
I was looking for that Phantom of the Opera. He wasn't there.
Well, John wants to talk about the earnings tax in the city, Michael.
Let's check in
go
with
to the
John.
Phone. John, you're on KMOX.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Great.
Good, sir.
Good, good. Hey, listen. I moved from the county into the city about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And now I'm paying I used to pay 1% on just what I made in the city, but now I pay 1% on my total income of the year. Okay, so I have to pay them $13,000, okay? And what I'm getting at is, I called on her and I asked him, hey, I'm paying you guys $13,000. How come we don't have any police protection in the 24th Ward? How come I never see a cop? How come when you call the cops, they never show up? How come I don't have any curbs in front of my house? How come I got potholes all over my street? I mean, if they're 100 cops short, where's all that money going? It seems like they'd have extra money to do some maintenance on the streets and the
curbs.
Okay,
good questions. Hey, before we let you go, what do? If you're paying 1% earnings tax to the city of St. Louis of $13,000, are you a Cardinal baseball player making $1.3 million?
No, I'm not. No, not at all.
Well, you're making some good money, brother. Hancock and I want to get into your business.
I worked hard.
Good for you, brother.
Here, so.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
$13,000 in earnings tax to the city. That means you make $1.3 million.
Well, that's a pretty good.
That's some serious change.
Well, I mean, it's a decent year for people like you, Kelly. I mean, that's.
What are you talking about? Don't be going there with me. Don't be deflecting to me. Good Lord. Could you imagine? $13,000 and 1% of your. Wow.
And, and to the point of the police protection, my understanding is that the St. Louis Police Department. In the city, has added police officers. They're still short of what their full capacity is,
right.
But it's very hard to go from zero to whatever and adding. And police officers right now are in high demand all over the country.
Well, especially well-trained officers. I mean, look at all everything that's going on in our country right now. We have specifics on requirements that we want from police officers, rightfully so.
Right.
It takes a while to find those folks. I still think they're about 100 officers short. It's got to be fixed. And it's one of the things that we as a region need to address. This crime issue is not specific to the city of St. Louis. And if it doesn't get dealt with properly inside of the city of St. Louis, it's already being a problem in St. Louis County and who knows where else.
Do you have to be able to run a marathon in order to be a police officer?
I don't know. I've ran one. Have you run one?
I've driven one. 26 miles, usually, every once in a while. Amy Markscores, our own Amy Markscores. She ran in the Boston Marathon today. She finished, I think. We'll find out after this on KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.